The following audio is via a Skype call.
Well, that's why I asked. That's how you learn, by asking, you dumbass.
Welcome to Manson Mitchell. I'm Suzanne Mitchell, and Gary Mance will be here shortly. And also want to say hello to the third member of the A-Team of Alternative Talk, Mike Roberge. How are you today, Mike?
Good morning, Suzanne. I'm doing fine, and happy Memorial Day weekend. I've got a good big show lined up today. Pretty excited about it.
You know, so are we. We're really happy about having our first hour guest back again. And then for second hour, DJs for a day. We've got some great music and a lot of interesting things to say about Memorial Day weekend. But first, let's say hello to Gary Mance.
You guys got something going on? What's happening around here?
Nothing you need to know about, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I'm smelling burgers and hot dogs, so tell me that I'm irrelevant.
We have a burger for you, along with some chips and some fries.
I like that, too. Just got a crown replaced. I got to be careful with the chips, by the way, and no caramel corn, that's for sure.
I can remember as a young girl going to picnics about this time of the year. This marks the beginning of summer in most people's minds. And it was great to go on a Memorial Day picnic and do exactly that. Take out the charcoal grill, put on the dogs, put on the burgers, and the whole spread that went with it. Not just the napkins and the plastic knives and the plastic forks, but the ketchup, the mustard, the relish, all of the fixings, the potato salad. And you know how everybody makes potato salad differently.
Yeah, some people leave it out in the sun while others chill it on ice, right. And the effects can be dramatically different.
Yeah.
I have those same memories, too, and one of my fondest memories were always the car rides, you know, as in, are we there yet?
Oh, yeah.
And also, you should have thought about that before we
That's
left.
Yes. And those all replayed with another generation when my children were small and we ended up doing stuff. We didn't do anything. Anywhere near as much stuff on Memorial Day, because as it turned out, as it got later into our years as parents, we thought, gosh, any other weekend other than Memorial Day, just because so many other people are traveling. And it's my understanding that a lot of folks are traveling this Memorial Day weekend. In fact, they're expecting people who are traveling more than 50 miles away from their house to exceed the numbers not seen in over a decade.
Oh, really?
Wow. Well, we hope they're in their cars listening to us this morning, because we've got two great hours coming up.
While we are in range, stay tuned, everybody. Yes, I look forward to Karen Dahlman coming back on. She was quite delightful.
Right. Our first hour guest is a second-time visitor. We had her on to talk about one of her books, which we found completely fascinating, on the Ouija.
And her lifelong passion for Ouija as a means of spirit communication, which I thought was pretty fascinating.
And she was such a great guest, and she had another book come out, and we said, send it to us, we'll read it, we'll have you back. And so we have her today. Why don't I read her mad props, and we'll bring her on, Gary.
Sounds good.
Karen A. Dahlman is known as a leading expert Ouijaologist within paranormal and metaphysical circles. Since 1973, Karen has been directly communicating with her spirit friends via the Ouija board, while receiving consistently profound and relevant messages from the varying consciousness and sentient beings with whom she maintains relationships. She is the author of The Spirits of Ouija, 4 Decades of Communication. Karen also holds a master's degree from the University of New Mexico in archetypal art therapy and is experienced in hypnosis and past life regression. Her more recent book is The Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Reunion. So for the second time, we welcome Karen Dahlman to Manson Mitchell. How are you today, Karen?
Yeah, good morning, Suzanne and Gary. I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me as your guest again.
Delighted You're to have welcome. You back with us, Karen. And I got to get a little personal note, a little name dropping in here at the
outset.
Oh, I
knew you were going to do that.
Of course. It's what I do. Karen, you were spoken of quite highly by a mutual friend, and that would be metaphysical researcher and author par excellence, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She was in Baltimore with you at OuijaCon.
That's right. Yeah, Rosemary's a dear friend, but she's also, just like you said, an exquisite, excellent researcher who's really done her homework. Yeah, we were in BuigiCon together, and we had our opportunity to speak there and participate and also share on a panel together about spirit communication. It was such a fun, adventurous, spiritual, spirit-lifting, raising time, and gosh, would have loved to have seen you both there.
My hometown, no less. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that things were okay for you, that you were safe. Currently, there were some people trying to burn the place down, and I kept looking at the TV images and saying, please don't burn down my birthplace. You can work this out. And so
that was sad.
It was hairy for you guys.
It was just around the corner, really 2 blocks away from us where it was happening. And yeah, we were saying our prayers and intentions to so that something would work out. And it did. But, you know, it did get a little scary. And we were all safe who attended the conference in our hotel. And everybody left on Sunday. So we really got out of there before it blew up even further. So everybody made it home safe and we're fine. But we just our thoughts went out to the city. It's just a fabulous city. It was a shame to see what was going on there.
Karen, after we had a really interesting interview with you about the Ouija board and your many years of experience with it, what took you over to looking at alchemy and mm-hmm. secret teachings of the sacred reunion, because it's not really related to the Ouija board anymore?
Well, what's interesting to me is that it is, and I've always been interested in alchemy, and my desire to learn about alchemy started in graduate school. In my training, I took a program based all upon alchemy and how the symbols, we looked at the symbols of alchemy and how that could appear in people's artwork. As a therapist, I was doing mostly art therapy along with talk therapy. And so we would look at the symbols and see what those meant to people. But when there's universal symbols that we all kind of tap into and we might use in our artwork or the way we talk with metaphors, there's something going on in our psyche. So as we started to connect to, you know, the dots with that, you start to realize that alchemy really becomes this blueprint for human existence of transformation and transmutation. And when we go through anything in our life, as we shift and change, as you can with the board, as you start to learn your spirit friends, they really help you develop into the best you can be and develop really spiritually, that you start to transform yourself. And so I see the whole thing of alchemy and my work, which I call either alchemical Ouija or esoteric Ouija, that it's this whole idea that you transform yourself through self-development, through your spirit communication, and then alchemy is the perfect backdrop to explain how this happens. So to me, they're married quite nicely. And in my third book, I bring these two together. And so that book really is the secret teachings from all of my spirit guides that I've been working on throughout the years, and how these stories appear in people's lives through synchronistic events, mystical experiences, visitations, things that happen to us in our lives that make us wake up. And when we start becoming more aware and awakened to these events, we begin to see more and more of them, and we understand then more how our life is really interconnected to each other and to the greater scheme of our lives. And alchemy is just such a beautiful story or a way to tell how this happens.
Throughout history, Karen, the narrative with which most people are familiar, and I think we started learning about it in grade school, I know I did, is that alchemy was the practice of turning base metals into gold. And one of mythological history's great examples, of course, is King Midas, who got really good at it. In fact, he got so good that he could turn absolutely anything and everything into gold, whether he wanted to or not, including his food. So what is the hidden moral of the story behind the history of alchemy?
Well, that was definitely the golden touch, and I think we all have that in our life. And let me talk about it. I'll talk about it literally and metaphysically or metaphorically. So alchemy that you just mentioned from the Middle Ages, and actually it predates that. It goes way back to Hermes Trismegistus, which is Hermes three times the great, and he was supposedly Thoth in Egyptian culture, and they believe he was Enoch in the Old Testament. So this goes back thousands of years before Christ. And that was more, we knew it more as the metachemistry of alchemy. So it was all about the transformation of base metals, such as lead, and transforming it into other elements. And they would transform it into ultimately gold. Now, what happened when they were doing this work, and let's talk about the Middle Ages, some of the famous alchemists, they were working in their private laboratories, you know, inside their beakers, flasks, and stills, and changing all these ingredients and adding constituents to them and transforming stuff. They found that as they worked alone, not only were they transforming these substances, they were transforming their souls. They realized it became a greater and deeper metaphor for their life. And as they did this, they began, and they always cloaked all of their work in symbols and elemental symbols or chemical symbols or mythological symbols to keep it away from the masses, those who they thought were deemed unworthy or those they thought that would kill them because it was definitely against the ruling faction of the time to be able to do some kind of real magic, if you will, because they were transforming themselves in incredible ways. Many of these alchemists were considered to be able to extend their life, and many of them did create gold. There's so many stories of them throughout history where the different kings or rulers would bring them in and have them be at their court and to create gold for them. And that was really not their goal, was just to create this incredible wealth. They found this whole byproduct of how they transformed themselves. So that gets us into more hermetic or philosophical alchemy. And this is what Hermes Trismegistus brought to us through the Emerald Tablets. And the Emerald Tablets really were these, it was supposedly made out of emerald, these giant stones, and they were relief carved, not carved into them, but relief carved, which we can't even do. This is something that was done many, many thousands of years ago. And supposedly they were kept in Egypt, and they were buried eventually in the Giza Plateau in about 330 after Christ because they wanted to hide them. And nobody's seen them since, but Alexander the Great saw them and wrote extensively about them. And the Emerald Tablet holds basically maxims, if you will, and there are ways to live your life. And probably the greatest maxim we all have heard, and it's actually quietly inserted into all the major traditional religions, is as above, so below. So my book really follows that theme of as above, so below, and also that includes as within, as without. So you start looking at the law of correlation and how things that are inside attracts what's outside, and vice versa, what's above attracts what's below, and what's below is actually the hologram of the whole. So the whole story goes from there. But so so my book really follows the concept of philosophical hermetic of alchemy, of how we can transform ourselves. So I'm not talking about transforming lead into gold, but I am talking about transforming the leaden issues of our life into golden opportunities and how we can do that. And my spirit friends have spent so much work and over the years with me on the board and in different various ways of communication with me and teaching me how to do this.
That was really well said, Karen. I wanted to circle back to one of the things that you said earlier, I want to make sure I don't lose it. You said something about when you were doing art therapy that you were seeing symbols. Mm-hmm. And were these symbols representing archetypes, or what was the symbolism that was giving you the impetus to look at the alchemy? What kind of symbols were you looking at?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Suzanne. It's the symbols that were starting to pop up, and it happens all the time when you start looking at people's artwork. There'll be themes that emerge, and these themes tend to follow some kind of archetypal pattern. And what I mean by that is there'll be some kind of characteristic or pattern we play out in our lives. And as we begin to start looking at these, whether it's through our dreams or through our artwork, it's really through our imagination. The imaginal realm is what I talk about a lot in this book, and that is a part of us that imagines, that creates, that visualizes, that receives, that gets these interesting messages maybe from beyond or in our dreams, or we draw it. And it's these themes that appear that are not, yes, they let me back up. They do appear to us personally, but yet on a larger scale, they're also globally experienced universally by others. And so when we look at this as, what does it mean to me personally? Let's also look at what some of these messages might mean to us on a more of a global level. Then you begin to understand you're not alone. There's a interconnectedness, a synchronicity of what you're experiencing. So for example, if somebody who is maybe going through depression, you would find certain themes would emerge, and not to ever say that it's one rule of thumb. It's never that way. But there's certain themes that might emerge, and the themes might be going into the underworld. The themes can be something of feeling really depressed, pushed down, and you start seeing a lot of colors of black, dark, and not that that's bad. It's just that it's telling you, the theme is saying, it's time to go into your underworld. And what I mean by that is we can start following some of the mythologies we know. And the mythologies we know of the underworld might be Demeter and Persephone, the Greek story of how the daughter of Persephone was Hades loved her and said, I'm going to snatch her from the upper world and take her into the underworld. And they finally agreed upon that she could spend half her life there and half of her life on the upper world. And that's how you get the change of the seasons. And so we start to look at what is pertinent to a person's culture, what's pertinent to their own psyche, but what is also globally scene. And so what I would do, and what I talk about this in my book, especially when I talk about the demon and the daemon, is look at what is relevant to that person. And so if somebody had these images of going in the underworld, I wouldn't say, oh my God, get out of there, it's bad. I'd say, go into it further and let's explore this. What do you see? What's the message? And so if you start to look at things as everything has a message for you, let's don't judge it good or bad. I mean, if it's hurting you, yeah, get out of there. But let's don't be so afraid that we can't at least ask what the message is. And so when you do a deep dive into yourself, and that's, this book shows you how to do that, this latest book, it's really following the alchemical trail of what the great alchemists did. They did the deep dive into the base metals of their life and started to emerge. And they did that by communicating with these messages, which really became an opportunity to communicate with the divinity within them. That daemon, not a demon, the demon was a daemon, the daemon within, to understand their greatness without.
You know, Karen, I like what you're saying from an aspect that you may not even realize, and that is that you've got confirmation for what it is that you're talking about. We interviewed last year or the year before Dr. Bernie Siegel, who
yes,
transformation guru, and he started having his patients draw things. Draw whatever you want. And he was also looking at those archetypes. He was looking at how they drew their families, if there was, you know, a sun in their picture or a house or various archetypal patterns. And he would also be able to see as a medical doctor what it was that was up for people based on how the drawing looked. So I like the fact that you're talking about something very similar, because when I hear something 2-3 times, then I really begin to pay very close attention. And so I like the idea that your art therapy was able to bring out these archetypes, which can help people resolve things that are up for them.
Yeah, very well said. That's true. And I'm familiar with Bernie Siegel's work, and I attended one of his conferences years ago. Gosh, but it's probably been 20 years now. He was doing a lot of similar principles of what we're trained as art therapists. I was specifically trained as an archetypal art therapist to always pay attention to these mythological archetypal themes, universal themes that appear in people's lives. And I got to say, that really has, I think, it inspired me and also affected my work with the spirit guides and vice versa for them to me, because that is kind of my way of speaking about these unseen forces as universal and archetypal and mythological and pertinent to us, but also pertinent to the global universal masses, and how we all can learn from each other in that regard. And the spirit guides always say to me too that, you know, what you're experiencing is not really private and personal, you know, it really is pertinent to everybody, so you must share it on our larger scale. Because as you know, reading my third book, The Spirit of Alchemy, I do get into some personal stuff. And I wasn't sure how far I wanted to go with some of that, but they said, it amuses us that you think this is private. They said, it's not. This is what many people are going through, and it's great to be able to be a mouthpiece and share this with others so they too can understand, you know, that it's not, it's negative or bad to necessarily go into oneself and go into these darker places at times.
Let's go ahead and take a break, because there's a need for us to move the economy forward, but also a need to get back to Karen A. Dahlman in her wonderful new book, just a month old, called The Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Reunion. And doesn't there always seem to be one piece missing, and how do you bring them back together? That's a sacred reunion. We'll delve into that on the other side of this short break. You're listening to Manson Mitchell on Seattle's home of alternative talk, AM 1150.
Preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Even doctors in the most sophisticated tests can't always find the source of a health issue. But there is one authority that always knows, your own body. Hi, this is Maureen Manucherry, the host of Where Energy and Medicine Meet.
At a brand new time slot, Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss her exciting guests along with her wonderful insight.
Check the events page on my website to find out where I'm doing book signings in your area. And don't forget to tune in on Thursdays for the Marie Manucherry Show.
Make plans to meet paranormal researcher Rosemary Ellen Guiley in person when she comes to Washington this summer. July 2 through 5, Rosemary will speak at the annual ESETI conference in Trout Lake, Washington. Her workshop, Living on an Interdimensional Earth, will be given at James Gilliland's legendary skywatching ranch at the foot of Mount Adams. The following weekend, catch Rosemary in Seattle, July 10 and 11 at East West Bookshop for a Friday evening and all-day Saturday workshop on developing psychic skills and building psychic protection. Rosemary then makes her way to Everett on July 17 and 18 for a Friday evening lecture on the changing relationship between humans and angels, and a Saturday workshop on establishing and deepening your contact with the angelic realm. All this will happen at Vision Quest in Everett. Mark your calendar for some great opportunities to work with a very high caliber and a nationally famous paranormal researcher this summer. With more than 60 books published on a wide range of paranormal, spiritual, and mystical topics, and over 30 years of experience in paranormal activity, this will be the only opportunity this year to see her in person in Washington. Rosemary Ellen Guiley in Trout Lake, Seattle, and Everett in July. For more information and to sign up for her newsletter, go to visionaryliving.com. That's www.visionaryliving.com.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to manceandmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Sign up for early notice about future shows on a spam-free listserv. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Mance and Mitchell show page at facebook.com/Mance and Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual, novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
I took my troubles down to Madame Rue. You know that gypsy with the gold cap too. She's got a pad down a petticoat vine, selling little bottles of love potion number 9. I told her that I was a flop with chicks. I've been this way since 1956. She looked at my palm and she made a magic sign. She said, what you need is love potion number 9.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell. We are here talking to Karen A. Dahlman, who is the author of an exceptional new book, and exceptionally articulate, too. I love the way Karen wrote this. The Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Reunion. We played that bumper just for fun, Karen. If somebody's problem is that they're a flop with chicks, or whatever their presenting issue may be, alchemy seems to represent, well, I'll just say that it represents it to me. the idea that if you don't like where you are, you can do something about that by taking initiative, by using the power of your own mind, including your subconscious mind, to create circumstances that are more pleasing and rewarding to you. That sounds to me like the essence of alchemy. Or do I have it all wrong, Karen?
Well, you got to add a little love potion number 9 in there too, I think.
Just for fun, sure.
Right. No, that's it in a nutshell. And then yet it can be so much more complex at times. I think the best thing to do is to keep it as simple. And so that's why in the book, I really gave a lot of examples and stories of how this just happens to us. You know, alchemy or in other words, transformation is going to happen no matter what. We can go kicking and screaming, or we can look at it as this could be exciting change. So sometimes we don't get choices. Sometimes things just happen, and I talk about that as the 6 D's, and like the D's of descent, where you're thrown into your own underworld, where you're forced to change, and that could be like through death, disease, divorce, deceit, all kinds of things that really scare us and are hard to deal with. I mean, we're human, right? So those things can force us into transformation, and often we'll find ourselves, you know, a few months down the road, sometimes a few years down the road, and look back and say, oh my goodness, so glad that happened. Or that's terrible, this, you know, I lost this person in death, but this is what I've learned through that process. You know, they loved me so much, they helped me to learn about the power of grief, or how to mourn, or missing somebody. There's so many ways we can look at this. The other aspect is, yes, if there's things in our life that we're not congruent with, that we don't necessarily like or to accept, we have the ability to make some changes. Therefore, we can transmute some of these things that are happening and transform them into something we want more. So, yeah, this is a practice of really taking self-responsibility and making some changes in your life. And life happens to us sometimes, and we don't quite know where that came from, but yet we can find a way to roll with it. And so I really see life, and this is what my spirit friends always say too, it's not that we're broken and we need to be fixed, it's that we just need to roll up our sleeves and get dirty sometimes. And that is what happens. That's what we must do. And through the process of getting dirty, rolling up our sleeves, we start to uncover so many wonderful treasures within that we never even knew we had, because we're so sometimes afraid to go into these transforming moments.
Karen, I wanted to talk to you about something in particular having to do with the banished feminine, because it seems to me in this alchemical process, when you're talking about sacred reunions, once again, you may be talking about the reunion of the masculine and the feminine. I've told this story before, and I'm going to tell it very briefly again, just so you have the backstory. I was a very young girl, a grammar school child, sitting in the back seat of my car. My dad was driving. My mom was in the passenger's seat, co-pilot seat. I was in the back seat with my sister, and the radio was on. And a story came on the news that, and I'm going to have to say it was China, although I don't clearly remember that. But the story was that there were some girl babies who were killed because the parents wanted to try again. And I remember saying to my parents, I don't understand, why would they kill girl babies? And after a moment of silence, one of my parents said, well, boys are considered more valuable. And that stuck with me for so many years. Why would boys be considered more valuable than girls? And so one of the things that I have just touched on and looked into from time to time, and one of the things I'm really fascinated about, is this lack of balance of power, where we're not all considered equal. And why is it that the masculine would be more important than the feminine? You talk about that very well when you talk about the banished feminine in your book. And so I thought about reading it, but there'd be too much that I'd want to read. You know, I'd want to read 3 or 4 pages of it, and I don't want to do that to our listeners. So would you just explain a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a very actually critical piece of this whole book. the idea that we are out of balance in our lives. We see it in our world. We see it globally. Again, here we are back to talking about the archetypal energy that affects us globally and personally. So that's why that's going to be a huge theme to this book, Alchemy Is. And that's why talking about what you just mentioned, the imbalance of the power of the masculine and feminine energies within our world, as you saw with your example as a child, hearing about the babies being killed that were girls, represents what's going on in the world at a whole. And this still goes on in other countries. And men have been, over many, many thousands of years, been considered the male energy, not just the male energy, the male man, the male person, the human male, has been considered more important. And this had to do with the fall of the matriarchal societies and rise of the patriarchal societies. And masculine energy, and I talk a lot about this in the book, is associated more with assertiveness, aggressiveness, going out there, active, doing. And we have come in our culture and societies to think that is the place and way we should be. Do more, be more, get more, keep up with the Joneses, buy that car. Where we're forgetting that there's another piece that balances this energy called the feminine energy. And this energy, masculine energy and feminine energy, is not gender-based, everybody. And I know you two know that. It's about what's inside ourselves and is reflected in the world as a whole. So the feminine energy is something more of reciprocity, receptiveness, allowing, receiving, being patient, honoring, cooperative. And so we look at these different elements, and we need to find a way to balance that in our life. And so we start to balance these things within ourselves, our personal world changes, people around us begin to notice, and what happens out here, the microcosm, macrocosm, above, below, is correlated. You start to see it in the world. And so I talk a lot about this to explain what happens within ourselves, what we have done to ourselves, not purposely. This is not any blame. This is just how things have transpired and transitioned for us in humankind. And this is, I'm talking about our planet only. It's different with these other entities and beings I speak to come from other galaxies and other places of dimensions, multi dimensions. They don't have this. They more have an androgynous balance of energies. They talk to me a lot about this. And in fact, my book, I talk about my bout with this imbalance in myself and really how I've been working at pulling that back together. But what I find happens when we start to notice these qualities, let's just call them qualities within ourselves, and find a time and place for both qualities, you start to find this ability to do more, and if that's what you want, or you find the ability to receive more. And it's always the balance of giving and receiving. And this theme goes throughout my book in many ways because of the alchemist. The ultimate thing of the alchemist, here we go, this is a big key here, is the sacred marriage of the king and queen. So the sacred marriage, they call it the sacred marriage of the king and queen, of the red king with the white queen. They called it the solar king with the lunar queen. They said, you bring these two elements together, these opposites, you find that they exist together and there doesn't have to be an imbalance. Doesn't mean you're perfectly in the middle with them. It means there's a continuum between these two different energies that the alchemists strove to find. And as they brought that sacred marriage together within themselves, again, how this translates to us, understand we have these different characteristics that work very, very well and complementary to each other. And we're going to go between them, and not at the exclusivity of leaving one out, but of bringing them together. Just like the alchemist did, we start to make our connections into the world at large. And the alchemist says they brought this sacred marriage together within. They created what they would call the lesser stone and then the philosopher's stone. The lesser stone was when they first started messing with this energy and tried to make it happen. And the philosopher's stone was really their whole search on this great work to find that ultimate connection. And when you made that connection, then the above becomes the below becomes the above. You are truly connected to your divinity within and your divinity without. There is no separation. And so it's really crucial and critical as humans that we begin to look at this just simply within ourselves. And as you know, as you brought up the chapter, The Banished Feminine, I talk about what happened to it over the eons and eras and why and some possible ways to look at this. But I also have to say, when I talk about the feminine energy, she represents the imaginal world and also the inner world. And so a lot of us are afraid to go within, go into the deeper depth deeper recesses of ourself and look at those skeletons in the closet or things we don't like or things that go bump in the night within and the darkness within where we think that's bad. And we don't realize there's actually power in the imaginal, power in the feminine, but it's a quiet power. It's a vulnerable power that truly knows itself. So we bring that up forward into the light of the solar king so he can see his darker lunar queen and they can come together within ourselves. And this really transforms your life in incredible ways.
You know, Karen, what I find so interesting in talking about this today and asking myself what is happening in today's culture is that you have just a ton of legislation which is coming up mostly by men about how to contain the physical feminine body. How can we, you know, not allow women to be in charge of their own bodies? How can we, you know, prevent any abortions? And how can we, you know, go in and look to see what's happening in there? And how men want to seem to control the whole reproductive system. And at the same time, you say in the book, we seem to be bringing the booty back. And so now I'm wondering about that balance. I mean, is this the last gasp of men trying to control women and their bodies? I hope so, but I don't know.
I hope so, too. And you bring up a great point. This is how we see this imbalance in our world. And yes, through legislation and also through how we treat people in the different countries and how we treat our natural resources and the animals. That all represents this feminine quality. It's more of being taken care of. And we've considered the animals as submissive and the women as submissive. And I like the fact that we are starting to see people not degrade their body and say, oh, my God, I hate everything I bore everything that's the waist and down. And that's what's happened. We've seen this throughout the eons of wanting to chastise people. Or just, my goodness, think about the chastity belts they used to wear in the old days. They'd lock up your whole lower quadrant of your body, and a lot of women hated their hips and thighs and stomach and butt. But now we're seeing women with huge rear ends that actually are being like, okay, that's more normal. People want to be that way. I think that's beautiful because now we're starting to celebrate the body again. And once we start celebrating the body and ourselves as women, but men also honoring their bodies, we start to see shifts outside again. It's a law of correlation. We start to see us start to take not want to maybe control and legislate how women should take care of her body or abortions and all these things. I mean, you know, we got to separate this whole mentality of what we want to think is right and wrong and really get out of that, because when you start saying things are black and white, we really run into problems, because when things are black and white, you're forgetting there's a whole nother piece to that element. It's things are never black and white. They're shades of gray. And we need to wake up to that. And I think by allowing and honoring our body and accepting the parts of it that we may think this is not what society wants us to have is our large derriere, but it has become something that's more we're seeing in pop culture, and we're seeing it in the media. And not that I'm all for that, but it's that I'm starting to see this. And by the way, a lot of people follow all that stuff. And so if people, young girls are starting to see that it's okay to have a larger rear end, it kind of allows more acceptance of their body, where they're not going to be so ashamed, and they're going to think twice before they let somebody put them down. Now that's more gender related, but these qualities are in both of us. For the man too, I think there's been, especially when I was a therapist, I started noticing, and they talk about this in research, more and more men were starting to be diagnosed with eating disorders. Originally, that was a rare thing where men were worried about their fat and if they were fat. That's become something more that over time more men have worried about that and started worrying about their body. And then there's this whole other thing that's going on in our world now where we have this health consciousness. People are being more aware of things we put in our body and the sleep we get, and we have rest and quality of life as opposed to working so hard. And we're seeing some shifts. And to me, that's very hopeful as we see all these shifts on different levels.
Well, you had me at derrieres and shades of gray.
Perfect. That's a perfect guy. I love it.
Let's go ahead and take a much-needed break at the moment. And when we come back, we'll talk more with Karen A. Dahlman about the spirit of alchemy and how we can turn that into a practical exercise in our daily lives. It's all about the change, making the good things happen. Let's learn more about the hows as well as the whys. So give us a couple of minutes, back with more of Manson Mitchell right here on Seattle's home of alternative talk, AM 1150.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.
Are you passionate about living a healthy and more balanced lifestyle? If so, Seattle Natural Awakenings magazine was created for you. Seattle Natural Awakenings is a free monthly publication full of information on fitness for the whole body, mind, and spirit. And it is your go-to magazine for local events, classes, and retreats. You can find Seattle Awakenings at health food stores, educational centers, libraries, and wherever free publications are generally seen. Or get the latest issue online at seattleawakenings.com. If you are the owner of a green, healthy, and socially responsible business, we invite you to promote your natural holistic product or services with Seattle Natural Awakenings. We reach over 40,000 readers interested in healthy living in the greater Seattle area. Call 425-350-5448 for more information.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything, at a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil, and Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child, and that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
We live in a world that's become predictable. Our realities are filled with distractions, hopelessness, and confusion. We've begun to lose touch of what we're truly capable of. It's time for us to regain our true potential. Join psychic medium and crystal child Lindsay Paul as she connects to the other side and brings back messages from beyond, along with her psychic and skeptic Abraham DeWeese and indigo child Sarah Ellis. They'll help you soar to new heights by answering your questions. Don't miss Wisdom with Radio, Thursdays at 1 p.m.
On Friday, Manson Mitchell welcomed back psychic medium Jeffrey Marks with answers to your questions about the nature of the afterlife.
On Saturday, intuitive Mary Beth Vanderlinden debuts on our show and we'll be taking your calls, so keep your phone at the ready.
Then astrologer Eileen Grimes will be with us in the second hour and also will take your calls. 2 hours in service to you when you tune in.
Bringing you fascinating talk since 2007, we are Manson Mitchell, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Following the herd is fine, until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell and our conversation with Karen A. Dahlman, author of her newest book, month old, still hot off the presses, The Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Reunion. Karen, you'll recall from last time, this is the portion of our hour together when we want to give you the opportunity to tell people how they can reach out to you online and participate in all that you are about.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Yeah. So you can look under KarenADahlman.com, and my last name is spelled DAHLMAN.com. And I want to say we are redesigning the website. We've got a really robust, exciting website because it's going to be more interactive. I'm reaching out to a lot of people who've been reaching out to me, and we're posting photos of the boards they use when they speak to spirit. There's articles, blogs, all about connecting to your higher self, connecting to your spirit guides, how to use the board in ways that'll be beneficial, information about everything I write about. This is going to be really interactive. And that will be launched in by about mid-June. We've been working on it for a while now. It's like my next project. But yeah, go there, check me out, everything that's going on with everybody else that's going to be interacting with me. Also, you can join me on Facebook under Karen A. Dahlman, Google Plus, Twitter. It's all under Karen A. Dahlman. I would love for you to reach out to me and let me know your thoughts.
Great. That is a good bit of publicity because you have so much to offer, Karen. You are a multifaceted lady. I wanted to get into this business of the shadow self. Mm. Suzanne and I, in reading the book, we paused and we talked about this idea of having a shadow self and how people, and I think that includes Suzanne and I, like anyone else, will sometimes run away from that shadow self, but because in the shadows, that's where you find the scary stuff, the things you don't want to face. So tell us about the role of the shadow self in personal alchemy, and maybe relate that back to the idea of a demon or a daemon or muses and how all of that fits together.
Yeah, this is really an excellent concept to talk about because I think it's what, as you said, we're all human. We have our foibles. And it's so easier sometimes to point the finger outside of ourselves and to run away from things that are scary to us as opposed to looking maybe at ourselves, what that could be. So the idea of the shadow self, it's a term that was coined by the late Austrian psychiatrist Carl Gustav Jung. And he's one of my heroes, is one of the people I studied. I'm a Jungian. Yes, I am. And a post-Jungian as well. But he talks a lot about this archetypal ideas and how an archetype, one of the archetypes is the shadow. And the shadow is that part of ourself, as Gary just so eloquently said, that we don't want to look within ourselves at. And how we know we're hitting upon the shadow or knocking upon its door is when something happens, we get a knee-jerk reaction, we want to just run away from it. And it could be like an interaction with somebody. It could be something within ourselves. Somebody could ask us a question about, so what happened to you when you were 6? Nothing happened to me. Then you know there's something that's bothering you. So it's things like that that we do need to eventually look at. If, let me just say this, I never tell anybody what to do. It's if you want to find that you can reach into yourself and find all the great, valuable treasures within and all these parts of you that really bring you back to the greatest self you can be. And so following the path or the breadcrumbs back to the shadow self, you will truly find some magical jewels within. And I'm not meaning like magic, fake magic. I'm talking about real things that will transform you. Here we are again with alchemy that will actually transform you. And there'll be a message there that's going to be related to you somehow on a part of you that you've kind of pushed aside, swept under the carpet, neglected, that really could be an important ally to you within yourself. We do this. It's natural, and we do it. It's a process that we'll continue through the rest of our incarnation of being a human being. That's just natural. But if we begin to look at these parts of ourselves that we fear, we can find the treasure within. And if we don't look at them, we will find ourselves projecting onto others and circumstances what it is we don't want to look at within ourselves. So you probably heard, and I know New Age circles used to say this all the time, the world is a mirror that reflects back to me of who I really am. And yes, it is. I mean, it's like attracts like. And what we're having happen to us outside of ourselves really is a direct reflection of what we believe within ourselves, what we think, what we feel. Because two people could be in the same situation and not have that same experience that just occurred. Or two people could be around the same person, and one person thinks that person is not nice to them, but the other person goes, God, what are you talking about? That person's the best. It's because we all have our own perspectives and our own jaded glasses, I call them, that we come to the table with, and that allows us to see things in certain ways. So I say, look at this part of ourself that is scary, the part I was speaking about earlier, the imaginal, this part that falls into the realms of things that scare us, things that are dark. Go within ourselves and let's look at that, because what you can find, there'll be a message. Now, Gary, you bring up the point about demons and daemons, and that's another real critical element to this book, and I also talk about it in The Nature of Evil. And this is all under this section called the illusions. I see the shadow self as an illusion. I see the nature of evil. A lot of these things are illusions. We just are so afraid of them that we don't want to look at them. But they become illusions because they keep us from ourselves. It becomes a smokescreen to to really not look at ourselves. But if we can go within and see that demon within, that part that we hate, that we see I hate the way that person acts, and it's really what really you do yourself. It's looking at that within yourself and saying, oh my God, I do that. I do that same thing that I'm accusing that person of. That is the first step. And you see that as, I hate this ugly aspect of myself. I hate it. It's looking at it and really coming to terms with it. And there's, I give techniques and tools in here of how to do that, to come to terms with it. And a lot of it can be through journaling. It could be through active imagination, waking dreams, sleeping dreams, meditations, visualization of light, hypnosis, altered states, drawing. A lot of things will bring you in touch with these forces. And I got to tell you, every time I've worked, especially in therapy, and with myself too, don't get me wrong, my own work with myself, but also with people in my practice, I would find if we can go back and just get that message, we uncover something, we turn that demon into a daemon. And it's not because the demon didn't have a daemon within it, or the daemon didn't have a demon within it. It's that all, again, here's the balance, the male, female, the king and queen, the good and the bad, the above, below. Within ourselves, there's always a daemon within a demon. And a daemon is that sprite, that elemental helper, that energy that actually has your back. Where a demon is one we would fear and say, oh my God, it's against me. Well, it's against you because it's saying, knock, 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 I'm here, look at me. And until you look at me, I'm going to keep causing havoc in your life. And once you finally face it, it's, you know, it's like being in a dream and you become lucid and turn around and face that attacker or that intruder. And they say, well, I just wanted to get your attention and tell you something. You're like, oh, that was easy. That's what happens when you look at yourself. Now, it takes time and it's a process, but it's definitely doable. And again, this is what the alchemists understood. You can't leave out one element within yourself in order to create that gold. You have to put all those elements together and include them all and go through the process. And then eventually the gold surfaces and rises to the top.
If people are not willing to look at their shadow self, is that a part and parcel of looking at somebody else and considering that person to be evil in some way?
Yeah, that's great, because we'll throw our negative stuff we don't want to look at. I mean, you know what I mean? We don't even know we're doing this. It's not like we go consciously, I don't want to look at that part of me that just, let's for example, that is really raw every time somebody talks about divorce, because I went through a divorce and I really didn't want to deal with my divorce. It's not like we go through it and think about it that way. We just may have a hate towards men for a while and just go, oh, I can't stand the way he talks. I can't stand this. He bugs me. And the truth is, it's not really him. It's the fact that you haven't dealt with the horrible feelings you have towards your ex-husband that you went through a divorce with. I mean, these are very common things that happen with people. If we can look at that and say, oh, it's not him that's bothering me. It's not all men out there. It's my relationship to the man within. It's my relationship to that man that I had in my life recently. And that's really, that stems from the relationship I have with the masculine within me. I don't allow that masculine within me to support the feminine. And you start looking at these things, and it doesn't have to be so deep and therapeutic, like going to therapy, although it can. If you just open yourself to it, as my spirit guides always say, just opening and acknowledging it, these aspects start coming back to you in dreams. This is when you might have the archetypal dream of a king coming to you in your sleep, or a man coming to you who speaks really nicely to you, or the image of some kind of archetypal image of a man in your waking dream, or even in your life, you start being surrounded by more men, and all of a sudden you're going, wow, these guys are great. It's because now you're starting to work within yourself. The dream is working it out for you. Your active imagination is working it out for you. Your journaling is working it out for you. And then you start to notice out here things have shifted. That's the real cool thing about alchemy. As we do our inner work and transform ourselves, magically, as it appears magically, our external worlds transform as a response, and everything realigns around our new way of being.
Well, I sure appreciate you putting that in such academic terms, because the thing when I talk to you, Karen, that jumps out at me is these matters can't be explained like pop psychology. That would be to cop out in a way to say, well, if you do this, you know, you follow your bliss and you burst right. The dream, then you can live the dream. And well, that's terrific, but that's like something you put on a bumper sticker. You obviously have researched this quite heavily, and it yields insights like the way I would put it in prosaic terms. I come to realize that if I am running from something, whatever it is, that thing I am running from is actually running me. It dominates my existence, and that doesn't work very well.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it in a nutshell. I should hire you to just write my next book. We could just do one.
You're on.
Let's do it. Yeah, that's great, Gary, because that's exactly what it is. We could run from something, but it actually is running our lives, and we don't have a clue that it is. All we know is that our symptoms are we're unhappy, we're anxious, we're agitated, we're angry, and who wants to live a life that way? And so that's why it's for me to put this book out. It's a lot of the teachings, all the teachings. It's still a teacher to me that I'm going through the years working with the spirit guides. They've really brought me closer to this work. And they told me when I wrote this book, they said, this book is your teacher. We're going to hand it over to this book. And they wrote the book with me. And that's the other piece about this. They were with me every step of the way, helped me write this book and have me mull over concepts and bringing them to our sessions and my dreams and waking me up in the middle of the night with these things I'd write down. In the morning, I'd go, well, who said that? Holy cow. And I knew my task was to really contemplate, write about it. And of course, a lot of this comes from my work being a therapist and just all my inner explorations of myself. But I think the key thing I really want your listeners to understand is that this is not pop psychology. This is not about saying follow your bliss and banish the bad and everything's good. I'm saying it's integral to include all aspects of your life and not to banish any aspect of your life or negate or get rid of. I'm saying it's all about integration. It's all about reunion. And that is what the alchemists knew. They didn't get rid of things. They applied processes to what they were transforming, whether it was air, fire, water or the element of earth, they would transform it. They didn't go, let's cut this out and get rid of it. They would change the metals into this precious gold by transforming them, not by extracting stuff, but by adding ingredients to it to bring out the beauty that's within. And again, they did this within themselves, not by getting rid of and negating and saying, that's bad, I'm evil, but saying, what does that evil want to tell me within? What Karen, does that negative thing want to say?
Thank you for being with us today. We have to go, and we will certainly look forward to having you back again
soon.
All right.
Great. Thank you, Suzanne, and thank you, Gary, and have a great and happy Memorial Weekend.
And you as well.
Stay with us for hour number two. We'll be back after this news break.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.